Good morning, everybody. Today we are going to be learning on the topic of pavilions, parks, and shuls, dedications, and Torah thoughts. I want to start off by mentioning the dedication of the shir, and that is I want to thank Moshe and Liora Berger who are sponsoring today's shir. Thank you, Makir Tov, for you being Makir Tov. And to Ed Klar, who is sponsoring Le'ilu Nishmas, his grandmother's yahrzeit, which will be this evening. Zissel Bas Moshe Asher Zelig, Be'ezras Hashem, you and the Mishpacha should have continued Nachas, and she should continue to get Nachas from you as you continue her legacy. Welcome back to everybody who's been away. We have a fascinating topic ahead of us. The story goes as follows. In the 1800s, a lady in a faded dress and walks off the Boston Tea. She comes with her husband's wearing a homespun threadbare suit, and they walk in. They take the train. They get to the offices of the president of Harvard, and they go and sit down. Actually, I originally heard this from AB. And they sit down in the offices of the president, and they said they'd like an appointment with the president. But that's not really how the way things work. You can't just arrive and have an appointment with the most important person in the university. And they're sitting there, and they're waiting. And the secretary feels that maybe they're ignored long enough, maybe they'll just give up. They don't give up. And after a few hours, she feels a little embarrassed. She feels a little uncomfortable. So she goes and she pokes her head, and she says, "Look, there's this family waiting outside. You would just give them a few minutes just so they go away." So, okay. So he's he's frustrated. He sighs. He walks out. He's obviously involved in something very important. He walks out. And he walks out to them and he says, "How can I help you?" And so they say, "Well, you know, we actually had a son who attended Harvard last year, and unfortunately he died in an accident, and we'd like to make a dedication." So the president of Harvard takes one look at them and says, "Look," he says, "we can't make a dedication. We can't put up plaques everywhere around campus. Otherwise it'd be like a graveyard where, you know, the Harvard." So they said, no, we're thinking more like donating a building. So he looks at him, this is the end of the 1800s, and he says, "Look," he says, you don't know what's involved. He says, "Right now, to date, the Harvard owns $7.5 million worth of buildings." That's a lot of money, and certainly back over a century ago. So the woman looks at her husband, and she says, "Leland," she says, it's that cheap to run a university?" She says, "You know, why don't we just make our own?" And so Mr. and Mrs. Leland Stanford went off to Palo Alto, and they created the University of Stanford. Now, the story may be apocryphal, and there's debate on the internet as to whether the truth of it or not. And Stanford's official version is not that. But it is true that actually Mr. and Mrs. Leland Stanford did lose a son in his late teen years, and he actually was the governor at the time, and he bought the space of the land. So whether this interaction happened or not, we don't know. But nonetheless, this is a very fascinating introduction to the notion of dedications, buildings, the naming. So Stanford is after a person's name. So what do we do about naming? Where does that fall into our Torah thought? Now, you may say to yourselves, "Well, that's a little bit of a moot point because we are standing and we're learning in the Annette Adler Beis Medrash, which is right underneath the Gluck Gelnick Beis Medrash, which is right next to the Rabbi Morris Friedman Beis Medrash, which is down the stairs from the Joseph S. Strauss main Beis Medrash." And then we can also go through every single window, and Ständer and chair and sunlight, and bookcase in this building, and each one of them has a very significant name. So it may be worthwhile just stopping right here. But there's actually a lot of fascinating history as to how this developed. How did it develop that this became a common practice in Judaism? And there's a lot of interesting history to it. So let's start at the beginning. You know, we may think that it might be a very useful fundraising tool today, but that's not exactly where it started. It started way before that. So here's a few examples in history. What we're going to do is let's do a little bit of Torah history, and then let's do a little bit of, we'll call it Talmudic history, and then look at some of the halachic applications, some of the questions which have arisen over the centuries. So here we go. At the beginning, so we know, actually, this is in the areas of the dedication of the Mishkan, which is, of course, why. This is the opportune moment to learn about this. This is the Mishkan. Everybody brought their gold and their silver and all their gems to the base, to the newly founded Mishkan. By the way, it was the most effective fundraising campaign in all of history. Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai. He talks about it in 2 days. Hamlochos Adayom. Right, there was enough, we need to know Moshe Rabbeinu's secrets, crowdfunding, what was he doing? Nonetheless, inevitably after the Sinai experience, one is in a different position. So after this all happens, we're told in Parshas Vayakel, Shmois Lamed Hei, Vayavoa Hanashim Al Hanashim Kol Nediv Leiv in Source 1, Heviu Choch Vonezem V'Tabas V'Chumaz V'Kol Klei Zahav. So everybody comes, there's an interesting description here, the men on the woman or with the woman, what this means to say how the dedication worked. It sounds like the woman are actually more active, and this relates back to the sin of the golden calf, where the woman knew when the right time was not to dedicate to her cause. We'll call Isha Sherhanif Tnufas Zahav La Hashem, and anybody who brought the gold of waving. Waving gold? There's a particular type of gold? Like, what kind of gold are we talking about over here? So Ramban actually tells us, what does it mean that there's this waving gold? So the Ramban says in the following, very explicitly, he says, "Kol ish asher hanif tnufas zahav, lo yu rabim kemerimei hakesef v'anachoshes, v'lo yu sohavas zahav meruba kekesef v'anachoshes." There simply wasn't as much gold donated. There wasn't, just in sheer magnitude, there was not the same amount that was dedicated of gold. It's called a tenufa rather than a teruma because it was in more smaller proportions. So people that carry the gold wouldn't be as plentiful. So that sort of, as they walk in, they'd, be waving their hands, people would notice that they have gold. It's obviously the more expensive of the substances. He says another option is haloikhin yonifu hazahav lahar oisai leshaveach hamevi al nidvasai. No, it wasn't the donors who were waving the gold, it was the receivers. The people in the big base of Mikdash will call it fund, the non profit, which was created to accept the gold. They would wave the gold. Why? To show the greater public, look what's just been brought. Look at this gentleman over here. Mr. Schwartz has just brought in a pound of gold. So everybody would be able to see that. So what's happening over here? In the Torah itself is describing there's a certain, we'll call it pedestaling dedication option or opportunity because of we'll call it the greater dedication which is happening. An example, which we see. Another example, as we move later on into the second base of Mikdash, the times of the Second Commonwealth, we look at the Nevi'im here, and Zechariah tells us, he talks about an individual whose name is Tzemach. What does this mean? Source 3 says, "V'amarta elov le'elemor, koyamar Hashem tzvakos le'emor, hinei ha'ish, Tzemach shmoi, umitachtov yitzmach ubono esechel Hashem." Who is Tzemach? The one who's going to build the temple? Tzemach is a name of Tzemach, later Tzemach 4? Mashiach. Mashiach, right? So remember in the prophecy of the menorah and that we read on Chanukah. That's also Zechariah, and he talks about maybe as Avdi Tzemach. I'm going to bring my servant Tzemach, and he's talking about the Mashiach, which could possibly come. So he's going to build the Beis Hamikdash. He's going to sit on the throne. And there's going to be synergy between the governor and the priest, right? So the between the king and the priest, the between the governance and the spiritual governance within society. And the crowns will be to Chelam, Tovia, Lidaya, and Chain ben Tzfanya in the Beis Hamikdash. And by the way, their names are much better in Hebrew than if you look at the translations in English. It's a little harder to pronounce them. Nonetheless, the Radak tells, what does it mean? What does this mean? He says in source 4, the second opinion, which is in the second line with the abbreviation Vav Yud Mem, which means Vyesh Mefarshim, Nizikaron Shiyun Nizkarim Befiyad Arois Haboim Ki Hayu Shmoisam Ksuvim Mufutochim Bohem. What does it mean? The crowns, whether it be the crowns of actual utensils or crowns as part of the decorative surroundings of the Beis Hamikdash, their names were inscribed on them. Why? So that in the future, people will say, "Oh, Tovia was one of the founders of the Beis Hamikdash. Second Beis Hamikdash. You look at it and you see, oh, Chelam is over here. He was one of the founders. He had the cornerstone crown, whatever aspect of the Beis Hamikdash it was. We look at the Beis Hamikdash, we remember who they are. This is the pasuk in Tanakh, which is referring to this. Not the only pshat that the Radak brings, but nonetheless, a very fascinating insight into this. Another example. Later on in Nehemiah, Nehemiah is, just to put this in context, Nehemiah is a later governor after Zechariah. Zechariah is a prophet in the first round of return of the Jews to the land of Israel. And the leaders at his time are Yehoshua Kohen Gadol and Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel is the governor and Yehoshua Kohen Gadol is the Kohen, which is why Zechariah was talking in terms of governance and spiritual leadership. There's always two at this point. So later on, the next set of two that are of note are Nehemiah and Ezra. Ezra is the spiritual leader, the sofer, and Nehemiah actually is a Persian official. He's a Jewish man, very high up in the Persian society, but he was a Persian official. And he had his allegiances fully and squarely in the side of the nation of Israel. And he built the second base of Mikdash, he built the wall. He was very involved in this whole business. And here's what he says in Perek Gimel when he's talking about this business. He says, "Vayakom el Yoshiv haKohen haGadol veEchol haKohanim vayivnu es sharatzon heima kidshu veYamidu dal sois val migdal amei akidshu vaMigdal Chananel." So he talks about El Yoshiv, who's the Kohen Gadol, who builds this gate with his sons and puts up the doors. Then he talks about the Migdal HaMea. There's this tower which was consecrated by Chananel. Then the next passage, "Yadoi bonu acharei anshe yirechoi, while Yadoi bonu is Zakur ben Imri." So then, the men of Jericho built the area next to him, and Zakur ben Imri was the one who was involved in this building. And 32 psukim goes on from who built this part, this gate, this entrance. Everything is dealt with. And finally, "Uven aliyah sapina lesharatzon hechziku tatzorfim ha'aroichlem." And the sheep gate was set up by the smiths and the merchants. So you have 32 psukim just describing the building, the second base of Mikdash, and the area of Yerushalayim, and every person who's involved gets a special mention. So this is Nehemiah, and seems to be pretty. This is codified for generations. So by the way, this is better than a plaque on the door if you think about it, right? Because Nehemiah is part of the canon of Tanakh, so we're still reading it today, right? All those things we're still digging, right? We don't have access to the Temple Mount to find their dedication plaques, but nonetheless. If you think about this, this is the greatest dedication you can think about. It's done by Nehemiah. This was the time when the Jews did not have a lot of money. It was not so simple to build this base of Mikdash. There were stops and starts. There was rumors and slanders. It wasn't so simple. The only little asterisk one should note over here is that the refrain in Sefer Nehemiah is anybody familiar? What is the refrain that keeps coming up in all of Sefer Nehemiah? Most repeated pasuk in all of Sefer Nehemiah is Zochra Elokim li l'tova. At the end of every parak, he basically says, and because of all the good things I did, I built the wall of Yerushalayim, I built the basement, I got it all set up, so Hashem, you should remember me for good. And he was right. He did a lot of good. He was exceptional. He was the liaison. He was the drinks master of the emperor of Persia. He was the one who facilitated and navigated the very complicated process with standing enemies and bad PR. Things haven't changed so much, right? But it's amazing. Like And he says, because I did all of this, Hashem, please remember me for good. So Chazal says, because he asked to be remembered for the good, you know what happened? He lost his sefer. If you look carefully in Tanakh, actually it's really sefer Ezra continued. Meaning Ezra and Nehemiah. Nehemiah isn't really its own sefer. In fact, when it's written, it's actually just written as a continuation of sefer Ezra. He lost his name. Why? Because he demanded his name. Very fascinating point. So when we look into this, we're going to already start seeing that there's a balance between needing dedication opportunities at the same time, also grabbing too much. And that seems to be, there seems to be a balance in that. And in Nehemiah himself, we see such a tension. Other examples. This is from the times of Tanakh. However, if we go into the times of the Mishnah and the Gemara, we also see such discussions happening. We learned a little bit about this before, but here's the story inside. This is a story about Yosef ben Yoezer. Yosef ben Yoezer was whom? What was the significance of Yosef ben Yoezer? He's in Pirkei Avos, and he's one of the Zugos. In fact, he's the second set of Zugos, which means to say that after the Anshe Knesset HaGedolah, so to speak, you know, devolved, and it was no longer there, we had the first person who was really Shimon HaTzadik, Mishiyara Knesset HaGedolah, then we have Antignos Ish Soicha, who was his student, and after Antignos Ish Soicha, we start seeing pairs. And so this pair over here is actually a pair which is significant who lives at the time of Chanukah. They're living under Hellenized rule at this point in time. Yosef ben Yoezer is one of the two, so he's either the Av Beis Din or the Nasi. He's obviously a significant leader of the time, which is why the story is so shocking. Here's what the Gemara tells us in Source 6. It's by Basra Kuf Lama Gimel Beis at the very top. To Yosef ben Yoezer, Hayolai Bein Shaloi Hayonoi Heik Kashura. He had a son who was not behaving properly. What do you think that means? historically speaking. He was Hellenized. That means the leader of the generation's own son was fraternizing with the Greek culture. That's the degree of assimilation we're dealing with. So what did he do? He says, Havole alisa didinri. So he had this this amount of gold. And what did he do? Kom akdashe, he dedicated to the base of Migdash. Why? He was trying to divert his inheritance so his son wouldn't get it. He didn't believe his son was worthy of inheriting him. That's what he did. Azil nosiv bas godil kalili diyanai hamalka. So this son went and married the daughter of Godil, who was the weaver of the king's crowns for Yanai HaMelech. Yanai in general in the Gemara can be used for a specific person, but it can also be used to describe generally bad kings. Okay, so we're talking about one of the either Hellenized leaders or the Greek king himself. So he married into the royalty of the other side. Oilide Davitu. She had a daughter. Zovin la benissa. So he bought for her a benissa, which is a type of fish. Kara ashkoch ba margalisa. She finds it in a jewel. This happened long before the Hasidic stories in Europe, right? And she finds a jewel in it. Amrale loy tamatke lemalka deshakli laminach bedemei klili. She says, don't donate it to the king, meaning the Greek king, because what's going to happen? He's going to shortchange you. I know how they work. I'm in the office, right? I get to see it. So he says, rather, zil amache legabe gizbari. Go to the Beis HaMikdash. Go to the money exchange at the Beis HaMikdash. It's fascinating because here you have a person who's the daughter of the crown maker of the king. And she realizes the Mikdash is more of an honest institution than than the other side. I mean, she's on, right, she gets it. So, So, don't say walk in and say, you know, I think this is a precious jewel, because if you give a price, what's going to happen is you're going to be locked at that price, and it might be worth more than that. And you know, the halach is if you make a donation at a certain price, you have to give it, so you might lose out. So, Ela l'shamye inu, let them assess it. Amatye, he came to the Beis HaMikdash, shamua betleisar aliyasar de dinri. It was exceptionally expensive of a jewel. It was worth 13 of these aliyasar de dinris, which is 13 the amounts of his father's inheritance. Think about that. So, Omrile, sheva iko shis leko. They said, we're looking in the coffers. We're looking in the bank account right now. We only have 6 available. That's the Beis HaMikdash was not doing so well this time. Right, the coffers only have 6 out of the 13. So what he says, Amalahu sheva havuli shis harehem uktashas l'shamayim. He says, you know what? I'll take what you got, I'll empty your coffers, and I'll donate the rest. How's that? What an honorable donation. So amdu v'kosu Yosef ben Yoezer hichnis achas ubenoi hichnis sheish. So what do they do? They wrote a note that Yosef ben Yoezer actually donated 1 to the Beis HaMikdash, and his son donated 6. Where were they writing this? What was the business of writing this? So Rashi says, no, it's just they kept tallies. Rashi says at the bottom of the page in the underline, Omdu v'kosu, nir rebe einai, shoykosu nacheshbonis shol hektish, kama mimachnis and kama moitzin. So he says, no, they just had it. This was the accountant, right? This is the bookkeeper. Made sure that everything was all right. So he wrote down just for the sake of keeping a record. However, the Ritva on this Gemara says the following. No, he says no. Take a look at the very top of the next in the next source. He says the end of the source. He says Amad v'Kosel. He says Yesh Amrim Shekosel Bo Bekein Pepinchas Cheshbon Asam. The same. This is on their books. So Yesh Amrim Shoyu Kosin Sefer Min HaHekdesh As Kedesh Yehei Zecher LaMakdishim Ki Ro'u LaHazkir LaDoyrois Maaseim Tovim Shoisim Bnei Adam. So no. It wasn't the bookkeeper. There was somebody in charge of donations. This person in charge of donations wrote down on a particular book that all donations to the Beis HaMikdash, this is who donated this is donated that, and it was probably publicized somewhere. They probably had a board in the lobby as an example, where people would walk into the Beis HaMikdash and say, look at that, Yosef ben Yoezer's son was donating this amount of... Isn't that incredible? So that seems to be the...
You see that this was publicized and not kept in private records.
Oh, so that the Ritva argues. That's the Ritva's suggestion. Rashi says, no, it's private records. The Ritva says, suggestion. Suggestion that we're referring to a public record here. Okay? As a possibility. Yeah, we don't.
No,
as a record, but there's no question that it was more public than a book. Because what does he say? He says, "Lahazkir ledoros maaseim maasim tovim shoisim b'nei adam." Yeah. Amdu, interesting. They stood up. Yes, the Maluk. Somewhere they stood up. They made an announcement.
Somehow it was a thing.
There was something. Maybe what it would be that at their monthly banquet it would be read out. There's some more public display of this. That's the Ritva suggestion. Fascinating. Another example. Just we're going through the Mishnahs and Gemaras. Examples of dedications. This one's much more explicit. Take a look at this. This is a Mishnah in Midos. Very, very fascinating. The Mishnah in Midos describes the making of the Beis Hamikdash. And here's what the mission says. It says, Ben Kotin also Shneimosar Dad Lakior. So there was a family called Ben Kotin, or a person called Ben Kotin, who made taps, 12 taps for the Kior. In the beforehand, there was only 2 taps. You can imagine the lines in the morning, right? What did he do? He dedicated 12 taps, a very simple solution. Right? You know how it goes. There's always bottlenecks in certain places in the shul. That was one of them. Eliezer would be happy, right? There would be 12 options now to wash hands. Says v'afu asa muchni lakior. He made a certain a muchni lakior shlo yu meimav nifsalim belina. What does that mean? It's actually interesting. If you go to the Mefarsha Mishnah, it says that there's a problem that if you leave the water out, the kior wasn't connected to the spring, right? The kior actually was filled with water, and during the day they would use it to wash their hands. But the problem is, if there's water left over overnight, it's possible belina, you can't use it. So what would they do? He made a special well type instrument where they would lower it down into the bore at night. They would lower it into the well at night, so they could just roll it up the next morning, and it was full, and they didn't have to worry about lina. It was about the concern of lima. Fascinating institution, and technological advance in the Beis Hamikdash, and it was in the name of Ben Katan. The Mishnah records it. Another example: Mun Baz Hamelech Hayoyse Kol Yodas Hakelim Shel Yom Kippurim Shel Zahav. He said, "You know what? Yom Kippur is the most important day of the year. Let's make the handles gold." So he dedicated all the handles of the kelim used on Yom Kippur to be gold. Helenia Malko, his mother, Osta Nivreshes Shelzal Bepischa Shel Hechel. So she made a golden candelabrum at the opening of the temple, right? V'afi Osta. Oh, sorry, that's the V'afi Osta Tavla Shel Tozav Shepasha Sota Ksuva Alia. She decided to dedicate the Parshas HaSot. I'm not sure why that was the choice. Like the Kiddush Levona chart, maybe. But anyways, nonetheless, that was the decision which was made. And so she donated.
It was practical. What? It was a practical thing. But this way, the sofer had what to read from when they would write the Parshas.
Okay, so as needed.
They were probably looking for the one to donate.
Yes, look, you know. whatever the dedication takes.
It wasn't a possible donation. No. Came up
right, this was not first on the... this came after the Mizbeh. So, but now... And finally, Nikonor Nasu Nisim Adal Soysov Oyimaskir Nasal HaShevach. Nikonor was not a Jewish person. Nikonor lived up the coast. Right? Up the coast in the Lebanon area. And he donated the gates to the temple. There's all these nisim which happened, and he sent the gates on a boat, and the boat was going to sink, and they threw off one of the gates, and he arrived, and the other gate washed up on the shore. But they're still called the Shari Nikonor, right? They were called, in the Mishnah, in the regular halachic parlance, it is called Shari Nikonor, the gates of Nikonor. And he wasn't even a Jewish fellow, but they were beautiful gates. Nonetheless, what do you see? You see, over here, even in the dedication of the Mikdash, different parts of the base of the Mikdash, there was recognition. There was recognition that these were, and sometimes they were even called after the person who donated them, as an example. Another example over here, very fascinating example, also a mission in Midos. That was a mission in Yom, we just learned beforehand in Perigimel. This is a mission in Midos that I thought we were referring to before. Chamesh Sharim Hoyo al Harabais, there were 5 gates to Harabais. Harabais is the external area of the base of Mikdash, right? It's not the Mikdash itself. Shnei Sharei Chuldo Min Adoron, or the Sharei Chuldo on the south. Misham Shnei Kriyos of Yitzia, and they were used for access and exit. Kufinos mina ma'arav, meshamesh knisa v'yitzia. Ted Toddy mina tzofon v'loyu meshamesh klum. This is before the Teddy Stadium, but nonetheless, so they had the Teddy gates or Toddy gates and it was on the north, and it was not used for anything. Is that interesting? The Toddy gates weren't used for anything. Shara Mizrachi olo shushan abirat zura sheboy koin gadol hasarif esaporo poro kol v'masadol yotzim in ahara mishka. On the southern gate, the Kohen Gadol will go in and out. Sorry, the eastern gate, they would have a Shushan Abira. And that means that they would have some sort of, whether it be a picture, whether it be some sort of mosaic on above the gate called Shushan, and it was called the Susa Gate. Right, up to Shushan. Which, by the way, and part of the reason the Mefarshim said that they called it that is to remember the fear of the capital, because remember it was built with Persian money and permission. So in the Beis Hamikdash itself, that was built like that. I always say, imagine today the Beis Hamikdash is built and they had the New York skyline because of the... I mean, think about that. It's a very depressing thing at the same time. To think about, like, you know, sort of under the shadow of another country. Right? Nonetheless, we see that there were lots of these things, these names. What are the meaning of all these names? So the Forish Mishnah going to explain each of these names. What does Chulda mean? What does Kufinos mean? What do these names mean? One interesting explanation which is given, and they, by the way, they explain what they mean in Greek, what they mean in Hebrew, what the relationship is. But the Tosfos Yontov actually says, very interesting suggestion in Source 10, Talatadi, Bedalat, Kachosuv, Harash. So he says that the Rash's Girsa is Tadi, not Tari, because there's another Girsa, there's another text, which has a different way of saying his name. Vagama Oru Chevi Be'erech Tadi Bedalat, Veloi Pirish Klum, he doesn't explain why. He says, he quotes our Adak, Pirish Yecheskel, Simon Beis, Simon Men, Kosav Shu Shem Adam. Tadi was the name of a person. And in fact, it's interesting because what he says is that the gate wasn't used. So essentially, what was the point of the gate then?
Emergency exit.
Could be an emergency exit, but it could also be that it was a dedication in of itself. Meaning, according to the Tosfos Yontov, if the gate's not being used, and it's on because of a shame Adam, because it was a person, it could have been that it was dedicable. It was something which was able to raise funds to the Beis Hamikdash, even though it wasn't practically in service.
Were these items given, and then whatever committee it was, named them?
We don't know.
Because there's a concept of Asnela Hasimilo.
Good, we're going to get there in a second. Good, so we're going to get there in a second. Let's just appreciate the long history that we see. In the times of the Beis Hamikdash, these are all cases of the Beis Hamikdash, where we see that there were names. How that evolved, let's see in a moment, because there's other concepts which are in tension with this. As you're mentioning, Dr. Siklik, which is as an example, for exactly that example, we'll get to the Pasuk of Micha in just a moment. One last example, just in the times of the Gemara and the Mishnah, is the Gemara in Yerushalmi, Talmud Yerushalmi, Megillah Chof, Dalet Amud Aleph, says the following. He says, O'oyser ner u'menorah lebeis ha'kneses, ad sheloi nishtakach, shem abali mehen, ein atrushay l'shanoisam. Says, let's say a person donates a candelabra, a menorah to the Beis HaKnesses. You can't rededicate it while the Shem Baalim is on it, when the owner's name is on it. And the Gemara goes on to explain, skipping to the next underline, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chia b'Shem Rabbi Yochanan, Im hayo Shem Baalim chakuk aleihem, k'moy sheloi nishtakeach Shem Baalim aleihem. If it is inscribed on that menorah, it says, if the owner's name has not been forgotten, you can't rededicate the same item. So again, this seems to be a more of a contemporary example, right? This seems to be over here, the Beis HaKnesses. And that means to say, we're talking about a shul, we're talking post-Mikdash era, and there's a notion of dedications, there's limits as to rededications, which we'll see perhaps in a moment. This seems to be the story. You know, it reminds me of a joke, just before we go a little further. You know, a rabbi gets a particular call from the IRS, and the IRS says, do you know Mr. John Cohen? And he says, absolutely. He says, did Mr. John Cohen donate $10,000 to the shul? So he says, not yet, but he's just about to. Okay, so now I got off my chest. Now we can move into the next section. So la halacha, what how does it develop la halacha? So it all starts off, the relevant source is the following. The source is what's called a Tshuvas HaRashba, the response of the Rashba. He answers the question. And most of the next cases we're going to be doing are actually casework, which is fascinating. So here's the story. So there's a fellow who lives just behind the shul, and they want to do expansions, and he very, very nobly and generously donates the shul. And what happens is afterwards he stipulates and he says he wants it to be called the Bienenfeld Building, as an example. So he wants to put his name on it. Can we put the name on it? So that's the question the Rashba has asked. So the Rashba looks at this and he says, you know, looking back, he says, let's take a quick look at the Rashba's answer just in his own words in Source 12. He says, Teshuva, the second paragraph, just to see a brief snippet of his words. Eini ro'eh sheyuchlo atzibu la'akev min adin. I don't see that the community can refuse the request to put the name on the building. V'loi min ha'ro'i mikamodin. And it's not him. And he says, and it's not even a good idea to deny his request. He says, ki ha'makdish v'aboinei mishaloi la'shamayim. First of all, it's like his own in a certain sense because he's putting his own money there. So you can't, you're telling him you can't put his name on his own, so to speak. Nobody's stopping him doing this. He says, many communities do this. In our own shul, we have a name on the wall. He says, it is an ancient practice which we see, and the reason is to give credit to a person who's performing a mitzvah. You're supporting a shul, you're making a base midrash, hundreds, thousands of people are going to learn, daven. That's we want to publicize the doing of a mitzvah. In fact, the Rashba goes on towards the end, and he quotes a few examples, some very fascinating midrashim, which we're not going to get into over here. He quotes the Gemara we mentioned before, and we learned about Yosef and Yoezer. In the very, very end, on the left-hand column, in the underline, he says, Mikan ato lomed, shoyonogim lochtov kein shemos amakdishim l'shamayim, Lios lohem lezikaron tov ala mitzvos, as he said before, to be a memory of the mitzvah, and he also adds an extra point here. He says, "Velafatois uliftoach deles." Sorry, liftoach deles laoyse mitzvah. To open up the door for doing mitzvah, which means what? What's the other consideration? Others, right? This is a good example. This is what we wanted to be proud of. That's what the Rashba says. Famous tshuva. This is the starting point in a lot of halachic literature for the discussion around dedication. So Rashba says, remember the Rashba is dealing with, he's not asking, the question isn't whether a person should or shouldn't do this, but whether the Kehila can or cannot deny it. Actually, interesting. Now, that's the Kehila is coming to him. That's his response, but nonetheless, he seems to think he lauds it. It seems to be a good practice. This is how it's actually paskened in halacha, in Hilchos Tzedakah. This is the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Reish Mem Tes. The Resh Mem Tes is actually a paraphrasing of the different levels of giving tzedakah. Giving tzedakah, giving a job, allowing a person to be self-sufficient, giving in an anonymous way, in all the different tiers of giving tzedakah, which originate in the Rambam's sort of different tiers, which summarizes lots of memories of Chazal. The Shulchan Aruch quotes one of the lowest levels, which is in Source 13. He says, "Pachus mizeh shi'itzen lo be'etzev." You give and you display very ungraciously how much you regret giving to the person you're giving. It's still a mitzvah, but it's a lower level of tzedakah, understandably. So the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles, on his comments on the Shulchan Aruch, actually make an interesting observation here. Here he says, a person shouldn't be seeking grandiose when they're doing the giving tzedakah. A person who does look to gain grandeur is going to, not only is it neutralizing that experience, but it's actually negative. It's going to come back to punish him. Mikol makom, mi shemakdish davar litzedakah, Mutar loy sheyichtov shmoy alav sheyelo zikaron v'roy laasoyes kain. Quoting the Tshuva Sarashba, a person who wants to can put their name on it, and in fact he adds not just can but roy laasoyes kain. It's a good idea to do so, as the Ramah suggests. So you see, lahalacha it is paskin, but the only thing that's complicated is, let's think about this for a moment.
There's a dedication party often.
Okay, yeah, no, there's lots of different ways we can do this, and we've perfected this art today to a great level. But just, let's think about this Ramon for a second. What is going on over here? There seems to be a little bit of problem. And that is, internally in the Ramon, he talks about not a good idea to publicize, but he says, but if you want to write your name, it is all right.
Because he differentiates between Stocker and Markish.
Ah, okay, good. So we're going to try to work this out. But before getting to that point, you know, it's just, you know, as Dr. Sickley points out, a very, very good point. And that is that the pasuk in Micha says, which is a pasuk which we all are familiar with, we've heard this pasuk many times before, it says, Higid lecha adam matov, what is, tell people what is good, Uma Hashem doiresh mimcha, what does Hashem really want from you, ki im asos mishpat, to do justice, avas chesed, loving kindness, vatsna leches im elokecha, and be humble in front of Hashem. And in fact, not this isn't just, you know, Micha's life philosophy. In fact, the Gemara in Makos and Daf Chof Dalet Amud Aleph talks about people, individuals who throughout prophetic history summarize the Torah in smaller and smaller, we'll call it ideas. So it goes from, you know, 613 to 11 to all the different numbers, 7 and 3 and 1. So Ad Shabbat Chavakuk Vaymiru Al Achas. So this is number 3. This Micha is the penultimate summary of the Torah, which means to say, if you want to understand what all of Torah Judaism is about, he says, look at this pasuk in Micha. And one of the principles is, Hatsnei Alechesim Elokecha, is humility. How does that work? So on the one hand, here we are, you know, making this whole party, ribbon snipping, curtain removing, the whole business. And on the other hand, you know, we're supposed to be a humble people. We're not supposed to be out there showing the world how important we are. We see that itself is reflected in Rama, because he says, if a person is mispo'er, ma'anishin olav. But at the same time, ro'i kein lahazkir. Now, obviously, he's quoting two different sources. He's quoting the Smug and he's quoting the Rashba. Are they in consonance with one another? But the Rama is the same person. He seems to be quoting both ideas. Hard to digest this. Already we see that there seems to be a tension. In fact, this is dealt with by some of the later poskim. There's a few different ways, and as all good ideas are, they're in tension. So the Netziv, as an example, he has a pirush. This famous pirush was called Ha'emek She'ela, which is on the She'iltos. This is before he wrote his pirush on the Torah. He wrote Ha'emek She'ela on the She'iltos. The She'iltos was a halachic sefer written by Rav Achai Go'on on the Chumash. It's a halachic summary of a lot of the mitzvahs, and he writes discussing this issue, and he says the following. It's interesting. He talks about the case. The case that he's dealing with is Reuven. Says that Reuven wanted to go and save Yosef from the hands of the brothers, and he didn't get there in time. He went off. He said, "Let's put him in a pit." He goes off. He's busy. Whatever he's busy with, he comes back. Yosef's gone. And the Midrash says that if he had known that the Torah was writing about him, that he was going to save Yosef, he would have put Yosef on his shoulders right there and then, and he would have brought him right back to his father. Ilu ha'iru Reuven yodea, if Reuven were to have known. So it's interesting. There's a psychological outcome of knowing that there's going to be memory of what you're doing. That's what the Shilter starts talking about. Meaning you say, I act differently when I know that for Dore Doros, for all generations, people are going to be talking about this incident. You're going to see, and it's going to be written in stone, what I did. And so by the way, the Midrash goes on and talks about another two individuals in Tanakh also, who also would have perhaps acted differently were they to have known. And then the Midrash concludes and says, and today, there's no Tanakh written, so who who's writing? So the Midrash ends very powerfully and says, today, that there's no Nevi'im, it says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Machtiv al Yodai. HaKadosh Baruch Hu writes down himself, and he's going to sign with Eliyahu Anavi, meaning to say, our actions, the next round of Tanakh is being written by our actions today. So don't think that it's not, there's no accountability. So but at the same time, the Netziv gets into halachic discussion. So yes or no, he cites the Rashba, he cites Hatznei Aleches. We see examples, he quotes Zechariah, but at the same time, how does this all work? So his answer is somewhat in the gray area. He says the following, take a look at source 15, he says, in the middle of the first line, by the period, he says, Ivro, gamze lo kasha midi, it doesn't seem to be a problem, de inyan tznios hakol lefi midas, and I'm not sure that abbreviation, dovar acher, I'm not sure what he's referring to. I think what he's saying is it depends on the circumstance. Sharei gam b'yosa olam yesh dvorim, v'abei gam b'havayosa olam yesh dvorim, sh'oysin osam b'fnei rabim, laharos koicho v'oitzim yodoi, k'moi osher sh'oloi v'shbegadim yekorim lis'nois b'fnei rabim, v'ein ze yotzim midas tznios. He says, look, there's people who wear fine clothing, and everybody knows they're wearing fine clothing because that's a reflection of their state in society. No problem over there with tznius. Now, I think there might be an upper limit at some point, but nonetheless, his point is that in society as a whole, right, where people walk around in certain ways, and that displays where they are. Aval, his parus, bekol gadol, he says, ein ze miskabel. A person who goes out there and is trying to announce to the world, trying to show, you know, how, you know, splendid they are, that's not appropriate. He says, and there are other things which even doing publicly is disgraceful. So a person makes a huge banquet just to show everybody else. Now, obviously, things changed on what's acceptable in society, but he's saying if you're wearing clothes might be different too. Having huge banquets, as an example. So, k'moy kein b'mitzvos yesh dvarim sh'miskabel, sh'miskabel v'no'e la'asoysam b'rabim, v'rak hisparus m'gune, v'yesh dvarim sh'afilo hoidol l'rabim hi m'gune. He says it depends on the circumstance. Certain things, it's clearly without taste, and you're just doing it to make yourself the center of attraction, not appropriate. The other things which are acceptable. He doesn't give us a very fine line, but he says there has to be a balance. And circumstance dictate balance. Not everything is done the right way. You know, when it comes to honorees, as an example, you know, of certain institutions, most cases of good honorees are the kinds of people you have to beg to be an honoree. Right? The people who you want to honor are the kind of people you have to work with, but because people naturally don't want that, and that's a healthy relationship. The organization needs honorees, whatever the fine organization is, and the people don't want to be honored for whatever reason. They don't want to do the limelight, but ultimately they agree to because they really have done a lot and they're going to do a lot. That's a good relationship, right? Somebody who's clamoring to get that honor, maybe not as much. Says the Haymek Shaila. Not so simple to write finite guidelines according to this. Rav Moshe Sternbach does. So he comes back to Moshe Berger's point, which is a fascinating insight.
Derech Harris.
Thank you.
Normative behavior.
Good, thank you. Excellent, thank you. That was
Continue just the next word. He says,
Yes. He says there's certain things that one shouldn't. So now, he has the interesting kicker. Let's come back to the Rav Moshe for a second. So Rav Moshe Sternbach has asked the same question. Rav Moshe Sternbach, who's alive today, Sheyichya, in the second chelek of Tshuvas and Ha'anhogos, Simon Tavchuf Aleph says the following. He's asked about dedicating. Should you publicize? Should you not publicize? Here's what he says. He says there may be a difference between giving staka to an ani, to a poor person, and dedicating to a building, to a shul, to a base knesset, to an institution. Why? He says because, let's come back to the Rashba. The Rashba says one of the reasons that it's important to do this is because it's liftoach Pesach. It's to open up the door. So what we're thinking towards, we're not just thinking about the past, we're thinking about the future. We're encouraging future involvement. So let's think about that for a second. He says, when you give to a poor person, an individual, right, there's no organization involved, and you're giving over to somebody who's in need, that's disgusting, right? I do tomche, you know, whatever it is, you know, like I'm going to show that I'm involved in this. Why? Because what's at stake? Yourself. When you give to an institution, like an organization, a shul, a base medrash, he says, what's at stake? It's future involvement, because people are going to see this and they're going to say, oh, maybe I should be involved as well. So there's a positive outcome. It's interesting today that a lot of even the stocker organizations or institutions themselves, right? Meaning, there's a lot of times where we're sending our funds, we're sending funds through organizations that reach people in need, because Baruch Hashem, we live in an amazing time. Orphanages, schools, social, there's so many wonderful causes, but ultimately they're causes. So I believe they would fall into the category of Rav Sternbach, that it is helpful, it is encouraging for the future. What he's saying is when it's not helpful, there's no Pesach, Liftoach Delis, Lo'ese Mitzvah, then we would lose that. That's his getter. Fascinating. And he actually is Medayikar in the Shulchan Aruch, the difference between Stocker and the Beis Knesset. Yes?
Isn't there a difference in perspective over here between donor and recipient? The recipient should always express gratitude. So when it's an organization, the expression of gratitude is by publicizing and by letting people, you know, thank you because so-and-so made this donation, now we have this shul, etc. The donor himself should not be the one who's been, that's a hatznei alechet.
Good, that's a very good point. Is that, yeah, that should be the attitude. It is complicated because, you know, anybody who's involved, Yossi's not here this morning, but you know what I'm saying, we're standing in a part of the shul which was established under incredible guidance and people, everybody in the community who's participating in making this section of the shul and the previous prayer project of the shul, is that people also do need that a little bit as well. I mean, to say it is important that there is recognition as much as people aren't looking for it, but it is helpful. You feel, you know, your children walk into shul, and that's what Rav Moshe Sternbach says. It's not just about the other people, it's about one's children. You know, one dedicates something. One can say, whenever you walk into this shul, into that corner, to that bookcase, whatever it is, that's what we care about. You know, just recently, actually, Sandy Klein just laid on a special anniversary, and he also laid, it was the first year outside of his father, and he said, I want to tell you something. He says, you know, he laid B'Shalach, and he says, that window over there for Shmois, we dedicated many years ago, and has the picture of Kriyas Yamsov, and he felt very special that his children could see him laying in, continuing his father's legacy, reading while there's the Parshas B'Shalach window, and that's a very special thing. That's a very special thing. So there's the audiences also. So you're right, it shouldn't be the attitude of the donor, but there is something as well. There's something which it is encouraging, which is very helpful. Yeah.
What you have to recognize is human nature. There's a Yetzirah. Yetzirah has a desire for kavod. That's very normal, very natural. Thank God for that desire, because that desire allows us to look. People donate great
huge pavilions, yeah.
Great things because of some kavod. So you give someone kavod, which he deserves, and he gives the money to build. Without the kavod, he might not do it. But the Yetzirah is part of this.
Right, so I agree with you, and I just want to point out, and I was going to reach this point at the end, but it is interesting. It's just something to think about. And that is that if you look around the world today, and certainly around America, you know, and you just visit your local hospital and read the names on every pavilion wall, and then you go and look at the Jewish names. I'm saying, if you just go up here, the Katz, you know, the women's hospital, there's a LIJ, right? There was UJA funding, right? There's a lot of Jewish money in a lot of institutions, and ultimately, it's interesting to see that a few generations later, that money's not all going to hospitals and synagogues. There's parks and there's libraries and all kinds of other things and organizations, Save the Whales, and that's all Jewish money too. And in a certain sense, you know, that guiding of that, we'll call it, that need, but at the same time, that channeling of goodness. Unfortunately, we're witnessing, as the assimilation rate in America increases, the assimilation of the direction of involvement also increases, which is unfortunate because there's so many millions, if not billions, of American Jewish money, which has been poured into wonderful things in general society. But so to speak, we've lost the focus of what the difference between Oisei Mitzvah is and not Oisei Mitzvah. And Oisei Mitzvah could be very broad. Social justice is not always a mitzvah, as an example. So is this channeling that it needs to be coupled with the mitzvah aspect of it? It needs to be guided in that direction. And there will be broad space. Let me just address one or two quick points over here, just quite cases that have come up in history which are relevant to us, without reading them inside. There is a case that the Sefer Hasidim quotes. This is a very shocking and terrifying case. He quotes, he talks about there was a person who wanted to build a shul, and people wanted to involve themselves with him. So they said, you know what, we'll also invest with you. And he said, no, I want this to be my shul. And so the Sefer HaChassidim, this is quoted in the Mishnah Berurah, in fact, says, his children all died, which means to say, the Sefer HaChassidim says, he was looking to preserve legacy, but to the exclusion of others. Meaning to say, his dedication was not because of helping expand the ring and being an example of Israeli, so it could be his makom. So the Sefer HaChassidim says, a dangerous approach to take. There's a balance, and that's perhaps an indicator. Now, this is a very severe case. The Mishnah Berurah actually quotes the halacha, but it's a terrifying thing. There needs to be a sense of consonance, a sense of community, of general direction as well. Another question which is raised, where does the plaque go? Is it inscribed on the actual item itself, or is it next to it? You'll notice that in our shul, many of the things are next to, right? So we don't have the names necessarily on the actual item itself, with the exception of, let's say, paroichsim, right? Let's say the covers of the Sefer Torah as an example. But generally speaking, they're near. The plaques are near or outside. When I used to work in the Young Israel Jamaica Estates many years ago, their policy was nothing in the shul itself. So they had no plaques in the shul. Everything was outside on a wall. Like, why are you based medrash today? If you look at the Glack Center of Torah, everything's on the outside wall. There's nothing inside. President Joel felt very strongly at the time when he was doing it. It was a $36 million project. But at the time when he was doing it, he felt very strongly the based medrash should be a based medrash, and then the names will be outside, and they're beautiful names. But there was a balance. So how does this work? So the Shevet HaLevi, Rav Vozner, Zichrono Levracha, was asked this question. And he felt that it was inappropriate to write on the actual item itself. He felt that a plaque is equally efficient. And the question that he addresses is the following. Remember that Gemara, the Yerushalmi, which says that if a person is still around, you can't rededicate the item. So he says, well, maybe, and then it says, if the name is Chokuk on the menorah, if it's inscribed on the menorah, it's like the Shem Baalim Olav. It's like the name of the Baalim is still there. So he says, people might be concerned. If it's only a plaque, then you know what's going to happen? 3 years later, they're going to rededicate the chair. Right? So he says no. Halachically speaking, Chokuk Olav, inscribed on it, doesn't mean to say that you're going to lose we'll call it the dibs on that particular item or dedication. He says it's the appropriate thing to have it on a plaque, near it, around it, somewhere near it. He says the exception is Sifrei Torah, and part of the reason for the Sifrei Torah is because how else are you going to? You're going to lose track, right? So he says the Sifrei Torah we can have on the actual cover of it itself. Rav Moshe deals with a similar question. Another question which came up in history, in Source 21 is the Pesachei Tshuva. The Pesachei Tshuva is a conglomeration of many of the later responses on the topics of Shulchan Aruch. And in Shulchan Aruch, Reish Mem Tes, right over there, he asks the following question. He says, what happens if you have an askan, a person who is a very, very avidly busy in arranging a particular dedication? So let's say you're a person who's in charge of setting up a building. They themselves don't necessarily have the money to do it, and they're not the artisans, so they're not making the windows necessarily or making the shelves. So what happened in a particular community was, this was asked to a person by the name of the Emunas Shmuel, I think he quotes. Yeah, Emunas Shmuel is the shul of that center. I'm not familiar who that is. And he was asked the following question. The Gabbai, so to speak, asked to have his name written on the building. Why? Because he was the fundraiser. He was the fundraiser, right? So he himself couldn't contribute. But he felt that, you know, all the time and effort I put into this should be recognized. And the community wasn't so into this. And what the question that he was asked is, do we go like a community or like this Askan? So he said that to have one's name on it, one needs one of two things. One needs either the money donated or the artistry invested. Meaning, say, if you look at these windows, I'm just trying to see these windows in this room. I don't see it in this room. But if you look at many of the windows in our shul, you'll see the artist's name is actually inscribed in the glass. And he says, is it here? I can't see. There's a Langford on some of the menu. Okay, and on the right-hand corner, you'll see there's a name over there. So now, it's an interesting thing. So he says, the artist is allowed to, and the donor is allowed to. He says, but if you're not the artist and you're not the donor, even though you may be the facilitator, that does not grant you rights for Oysa Mitzvah. Yes, it's wonderful. Yes, it's admirable. But he says, nonetheless, that's a very interesting getter that Pesach Shuvah suggests. Most people who ask on him are also donors, but nonetheless, it's an important donor. Last question, which comes up, and this is very important. This came up, you know, I know a particular institution that somebody donated a room, and a number of years later, the building was in its next stage of iteration, and they wanted to, you know, they were going to gut that particular room, and they were going to make it into something else. So the person says, I want my $18,000 back, please. Right? So what do you do about that? Meaning, the Gemara says, you know, shame b'alim olav, the guy's still around, right? What do you do? I want the money, where is it? What do you do about that? So the Shevet Levi says a very important rule. The Rav Wozniak says a very important rule about this. He says, that's true. He says, however, take a look at this, just to see it in his own words, on the very, very last page of our learning today. Rav Wozniak says, the second column, on the left-hand column, in the second paragraph, he says, Bar Midang, Halo Kvar Yodua Mashakosa Pachuas Mahara Mizrahi, quotes the Mizrahi who has a response. He says the following, Simon Mem Gimel, Dvachol Inyanei Nidreit Stoker, Azlinon Basar Umdana. We go after the assumed donated mindset at the time of donation. They view our Shach in Yoradeh, he quotes the Shach in the Hilchus Stoker. He says, Umashra Gamkein Ashach Dinei Nadorim Nit Stoker, and it is an assumption. It's clear that the assumption of any institution which is fundraising is that we're trying to make, let's say, a new library, we're trying to make a new social hall, whatever it is, we want the name for these years that will be used. But not that all may add. That forever and all eternity, this is going to be the so-and-so's room, so-and-so's library. The years of usage is what you're dedicating. And for the many, many thousands of people who go through that and use that particular room and use that basement and use that library before it is reconstituted, yes. You'll see, that, by the way, this is a complication. Recently, Article came out with a new sitter. And what do you do with the old names, right? They came out with the Beis Yosef, which is a reiteration of the original brown one, right? The RCA just came out of the news center. What do you do in these cases? Obviously, there's additions and so on. But the umduna, the assumption is that when something's being dedicated, it's being dedicated for the time it's used, and the schus is immeasurable for those years that it's used. But at the same time, there might become a time when the institution may need to move on with this. So this is a little bit of the balance. And I think that, Dr. Siklik, you're pointing out the point, and Elliot, you're making an excellent point, and that is that mitzad the giver, we as the givers, as much as it is important to us, it's not the giver should be done in a way where one doesn't wish to want to have to see have one's name. But at the same time, mitzad the institution and also mitzad the chinuch for everybody around, and also mitzad one's children. There's a tremendous aspect of not doing this, not just because it's a good fundraising technique, but also because it is mefarsem oisei mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, and we should be proud that our money is going to mitzvahs. Rabbi Chanan Nakash Murat Sagosh Baruch, Lizakos, Israel, Fikha, Fibra, and Tarmis Shinemar, and Nechovetz Mansiko Yagdil Torah Yadir.